D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and Connor Newt here with you on a sweltering July 1st. Again, your daily reminder of how much I hate summer, but we don't have to relitigate that right now. World Cup action ongoing. Senegal, a 1-0 lead against Belgium at halftime. The winner of that match would play, or will play, the winner of the U.S. men's national team's match tonight against Bosnia-Herzegovina. So we'll see what happens there. I was glued to my TV earlier today, hoping that Congo was going to pull off what I have to imagine would have been one of the biggest upsets in soccer history against England. But Harry Kane saved the day for the Brits, and England wins 2-1. I was rooting hard for the Congo because if Congo would have pulled off the upset, I don't know if I would have been able to do the show today because I would have been glued to like the BBC for the rest of the day to hear all of the commentary and to see if London would burn.
Oscar Shibwe thanks you for your support, by the way.
Is he from the Congo?
He is.
Okay. Well, there you go.
The Congo came out and made a great play and scored. England looked really rattled early, and then they hung in there. They started playing well. The Congo goalie, I forget his name, but man, Mampasi or something like that, he made so many highlight reel saves, and they were holding him off. But then Harry Kane, the superstar for England, came through to score too. That's a big theme here. The superstar players around the world are all shining here with Messi playing great. Mbappe, we were watching yesterday live. He's been putting on a show. And then Kane has had a big tournament so far. So England has survived. So I can't wait to see some of the headlines here. The drama around that team is always unprecedented. And they got the US of A tonight.
England versus Mexico
in
the next round. That'll be a good one.
Mexico, they had a great crowd last night in their first game, and it was against Ecuador, another Spanish-speaking country, obviously. It was buzzing last night.
It was so cool.
It was awesome. They came out and scored too early. That place went nuts. I saw a clip. Did you see the clip on social media? There was a random fan of Mexico at the Dodgers game last night, and when Mexico scored, he was in the front row right behind home plate, and he just starts screaming, "Go!" Like, he didn't care who was around him, who hurt him. He didn't care that the game was going on. He just kept screaming, "Goal for Mexico."
I love it. That's so cool.
These people are crazy.
So your confirmed matchups in the round of 16 at the World Cup: Paraguay versus France, Canada versus Morocco, Brazil versus Norway, Mexico versus England. Those are the confirmed matchups so far in the round of 16. And if the U.S. men's national team wins tonight against Bosnia, the U.S. would play the winner of the game ongoing right now. Senegal, a 1-0 lead against Belgium as the second half gets underway.
Coach Willie's a little worried about the game tonight. There's a lot of hype about
Coach
the USA
Willie's
team.
Coach worried about the Bosnians.
Worthy. They're worthy of the hype because they've been playing so well. But let's not overhype here. You got to take care of business, boys.
Now,
let's go.
Can you place, Bosnia and Herzegovina on the map?
Yeah, generally, yeah.
It's what, southeastern Europe, thereabouts?
Yeah. I think that's fair, yeah.
Like, I could give you a general idea of where it is.
Yugoslavia, like, when I was in high school, it was still Yugoslavia.
Yes.
So that's what I had to identify in the geography class.
There are fun things to say on today's program. Ilya Labushkin, Bosnia, Herzegovina. Very fun things to say.
And then this Baudouin guy that...
Yes.
Was involved in a trade. We still don't know exactly if we're right or not.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. So I do want to touch on something that happened earlier this week. Of course, we discussed it. All of you know about it. On Monday, Chris Johnson, former Tennessee Titans running back, went on Good Morning America and revealed that he has been diagnosed with ALS. And it's an absolutely terrible, gut-wrenching story. Chris Johnson, I believe, is just 40 years old, and I know a lot of Titans fans out there, feel terrible because of just how much joy Chris Johnson brought to Titans fans for many years. But it's got me wondering about ALS and the continued risks of playing football. There have been studies done. I am reading from Neurology Today. A study of nearly 20,000 NFL players found that they have a 4 times higher rate of ALS than the general male population, and players who had been diagnosed with ALS had significantly longer careers, 7 years, than athletes without ALS. And we talked about this a little bit with Trevor Maddich, who, of course, had a long playing career, both in college and in the NFL. He played more than 10 years in the NFL. Derek Mason, mm-hmm. you played 15 years in the NFL. And I am curious for your opinion on this. Mm-hmm. If you had known all the risks associated with football, would that have changed anything for you?
Had I known all the risk, probably I would have loved to have been, you know, because the way they see athletes or the way they see the body now is totally different from, you know, when I was playing. I think it's more, you know, we want to make sure we maximize our, you know, the players out there on the field, man or woman. We want to make sure that we strap them with all these gadgets so we know and we can foretell anything that may happen to them physically. When I was playing, that wasn't the case. It, you know, it was nowhere near that. I mean, guys did some things on their own, but it wasn't to that, to the magnitude it is now. So if I would have known and understood, I still would have played. I think you approach things. And I got Coach Heimerdinger, when he first got here to Nashville, it was about after a year or so when I started playing. And I was one of those dudes that, you know, growing up in Detroit, it was you get everything you can get. It was like you go for that extra. If you can get it, you get it. There was no, you ran out of bounds, you were called a punk. You know, you wasn't tough. So, and I'm talking about high school. So you didn't see anybody running out of bounds. You saw people attacking contact, going at contact. And Heimerdinger told me, I think it was after a year or two after he had been there, he said, listen, know when the journey ends. We don't need you to get that extra yard and hurt yourself or put yourself in a compromising position. We'll get it. Get it when you need to get it. Don't try to get that extra yard when it's not there. And when he said that, it made sense. Why am I going to try to, you know, run into a guy that's 20 pounds heavier than me, and more than likely he's bigger than me, taller? I already got the first down. I don't need to get that extra yard. Or get down, avoid the hit. I was blessed to not have some of the things happened to me that I've seen happen to other players. It had nothing to do necessarily with what I did. I trained. I did everything that everybody else was doing. I probably did a little bit more. But what made my situation different from everybody else's? You know, and not to say that, you know, guys that took the approach I took still didn't have injuries. But I realized that, listen, there's life after football. And if I can try to do anything to maximize more time on this earth with my children, then I'm going to do it. But it wouldn't have made me think, had I known all this, oh, I'm going to stop playing football. Listen, God bless me with that ability, okay? I'm not going to throw it away. I'm just not. There was a talent there. It afforded me to go to college. It afforded me to have the life that I have now, which is a good life. It's not. It's good. But it was because of the blessings that was bestowed on me. So I'm not going to sit here after all of that and say, no, I wouldn't have played. No, I would have played because I was blessed. Not everybody's – there's billions of people in this world. But there's only, what, 20 – when you say, what, 50-something guys per team? So do the math.
Yeah.
2,000-some players. There's that many people playing this league. So who
and a whole exactly. bunch of other people that would love to take somebody's place.
Absolutely.
That doesn't want to play.
Absolutely. So
it's a real I don't know, paradox in some ways because
I was about to hit it.
Because there's just it's just the way people who love their sport are wired. Like, there was a great study. Steve Watterson, who was the longtime strength coach for the Titans, he was reading. He shared 1 year ago on the radio a study that he had read about Olympic athletes. Mm-hmm. And I think there was some sort of question of if you could take a pill, that a fictitious pill that would allow you to win a gold medal, but you would sacrifice X amount of years off your life. It was a very high number. It wasn't like, hey, you're going to die 1 year before you would ordinarily die. It was like a lot of years, significant. I can't remember what the number was. Overwhelmingly, the Olympic athletes said, sign me up. I'll trade X years off the back end of my life so I could win a gold medal. I don't think football players are wired much differently. I think they love the game so much that they will put to the side, they'll compartmentalize the risk. They'll accept the risk. I do wonder, though, how parents feel about the data that's there now, especially with a lot of other sports. Did you ever, like, do you think maybe looking back, Derek, if you'd have known the ALS component of this that we're talking about, this is why we're talking about it today, because of Chris Johnson's story and the study of you're much more likely to maybe be prone to a terrible disease like that. And then the concussion part, CTE, all of the veteran football players that you can see, some guys, you know, are struggling with other health issues, you know, hip replacements or knee replacements. Do you think you might have been shifted towards other sports? You might have been thinking about other sports rather than football? Would you have considered it? Because you didn't start playing football until...
My story is not like many, at least back in the day. It's not like many. I didn't start playing until my 11th grade year. So
that's pretty rare.
Yeah, there was this gravitational pull, like to basketball or track or something else. But then something happened. When I was playing basketball, I messed up my hip, and I'm sitting there, and my coach walked past, who's the track coach, also the football coach, because he had been asking me, when are you going to play football? He had been asking me for almost 2 years, when are you going? And I'm like, no, I don't want to touch it. As I'm sitting there, he walked past, and he said, that's why I told you you should have played football. And I was like, you know what, let me go ahead and give it a try. And I did, but you know who else thinks like, say, gold medalists or football players? And I'm sure you can go to hockey and ask those guys the same thing. And they would more than likely they would say, "Man, I'll still play."
Yeah,
you know, because of such a physical sport. But those that sign up for our armed services, I've been in a room with them, and to a man and a woman, they said, "I'd do it again." Even though they know what happens possibly on the other side, they still say, I do it again. Because there's always that why. It's the why. It's not necessarily the question. It's not that I'm going to do it. It's the why are you going to do it? Mm-hmm. And I heard from those men and women, they said, because I love my country, or my dad served, or my mom served, and this is a part of our family. I love it. I just want to be a part of a team. So even though you may know all that stuff, those whys are the things that are making you afford or allowing you to do those things. And my why was, I was blessed with this ability. Why not play? You know, and I knew about concussions, but it wasn't as prevalent as far as, like, you know, the science behind it and everything else and what the NFL was holding back. But every guy knew there was a possibility that you can get hurt. I mean, we've seen guys, Stingley, we've seen them get paralyzed, you know, on the field. So guys see this, and guys still choose to say, you know what, I'm going to play that sport. And I think it's that way with just about everything. If you love it that much and you feel you've been blessed to do this, whatever it is, you're going to say, even if you've suffered some setbacks or something else, you're going to say, yeah, I'd do it all over again.
It's just sobering when you look at how young these players have been diagnosed with ALS. Chris Johnson is 40. I believe he was diagnosed a year ago. He's just now revealing it, if I remember all of the details correctly. So he was in his late 30s, early 40s when he was diagnosed. Tim Shaw, was in his late 20s, early 30s when he was diagnosed. Steve Gleason was 34 when he was diagnosed. These are young men.
How old was O.J. Bergantz? I think O.J. was 30 because he had just retired, so he had to be early, late 30s, mid to late 30s.
I'll have to take a look on Bergantz. But it's just it is. And Willie, you did ask this question, and I'll answer it before we get back to it on the other side. 615-737-1025. Like, I can tell you, my wife and I, we have a 4.5-year-old son. He has taken a slight interest in sports. He's played soccer, like most 4.5-year-olds do. It's already been determined that football will not be an option to him. We will not allow our son to play football, which means we probably won't allow our son to play hockey either, because there are issues with concussions and CTE in ice hockey as well. So, I don't know if he'll ever take up an interest in football, but we certainly will not steer him in that direction. Like, we have made a decision as a family that Arlo will not be playing football. The risk is just too immense for us, for him to take that chance. We want him to play sports. If he wants to play basketball, if he wants to play baseball, if he wants to play tennis, go for it. But football is already off the list.
I think there's a lot of levels to that. It's the participation level when kids are younger. Like, Arlo is so young, four and a half. It's early. I know some parents that have their kids in some sport. Usually it's soccer or something like that, or T-ball or something. Yeah. I'm like, are you really – there's or not basketball. Much you can really get at that age. Like, they're just – they don't – they can't,
just running
they can't
around.
Really comprehend. Just work on the skills is what – I wouldn't – worry about playing in a game when they're 4, 5, or 6. But so he's got a lot of developing to do in his brain. What does he love to do, right? And so I think all parents have to see that, which is why I think, too, it's good to try a lot of things. Our model, I think, is still a little bit wacky right now with the travel sports and stuff and the specialization. But I think, too, what I wonder when I think about Chris Johnson and ALS and all these things about football is something that Dave Winfield said years and years ago. Dave Winfield, famously, he's a baseball Hall of Famer, but he was drafted in the NFL, Major League Baseball, and the NBA, all three. And he chose baseball. And one of the reasons was he thought baseball was the one that he could play the longest and stay the healthiest. And he says it to this day. And he probably was a good enough athlete to play any of the sports if he wanted to. But I wonder if some of the athletes, some of the premier athletes, as they get to the level of, you know what, I could probably do this in either of these sports, will any of them turn away from football? Because for years, with the spotlight of the NFL and the popularity of the game, the glare, that was the hardest thing for me when I gave up football and concentrated on basketball and baseball in high school. We had a great high school football team. We had the huge crowds on Friday night. That was the hardest thing for me to give up because that was the glare. That was the popular sport. Like, that's what everybody was watching. We didn't get the same kind of crowds at basketball and baseball. But I thought I wasn't quite as good. I didn't enjoy it quite as much. So I just wonder about that decision. It really didn't have to do with concussions or anything like that. But everybody's got their reasons. But football usually wins with the popularity of it. But I wonder how that will go as we learn more and more about the risks out there.
615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction on Chris Johnson's ALS diagnosis from earlier this week. I was curious what Derek Mason would say, because as he said so eloquently, he was blessed with the gifts to have a long career in the NFL. But the data out there is stark. And I do wonder how that will influence young people when it comes to playing football and their parents allowing them to play football. 615-737-1025. We'll continue this coming up next. There is another element of the story that has popped up, and I want to touch on that as well. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
This was a peer research paper. It wound up appearing in multiple medical journals, was cited by the American Medical Association. its findings are ironclad. So, look, there's a tie. And the thing about Strahan that I was thinking of is you have Chris Johnson on this morning. And to me, if Michael Strahan were being genuinely inquisitive and genuinely at all journalistic, and I know he's not a journalist by training, but blah, 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 there are a couple of questions you have to ask. Number one, do you regret playing football? Looking at your life now, sitting here at 40, seeing the ties between football and AOS, the possibility that that game causes, if you could do it all over again, would you play? And maybe he says, no, I would do it. It was worth it, blah, blah, blah. And maybe he says, no way I would do it. Either way, that's the money question of a reasonable interview.
That was veteran sports writer Jeff Perlman, author, started his career here at the Tennessean.
Yes, he did.
Remarking on the interview that Michael Strahan had with Chris Johnson on Good Morning America. And I have a ton of respect for Perlman and everything he's accomplished as a sports writer and author. I disagree with him there. I don't think Michael Strahan needs to press Chris Johnson in this interview on Good Morning America about, do you regret playing football? Like, that's not what Michael Strahan is there to do. Now, from a journalist's point of view, I certainly think those questions should be asked. But I don't have an issue with Strahan handling Johnson with kid gloves, for lack of a better term, in that sit-down he had on Good Morning America. I don't think that was the purpose of that specific interview. Now, if other people want to conduct interviews with Chris Johnson in the future and ask him that question, that's fair game. But I don't have an issue with Strahan not asking that question the other day.
I think over time, he'll probably get asked that. So I agree with you, Adam. I don't know if I have an issue, but I see Perlman's point. And here's where I think Strahan, just this is straight up as a person who has done a lot of interviews. We do interviews on this show almost every day. And we always are asking ourselves, hey, what do I want to ask? What's a good question? And Derek, I think when you're a former player like Strahan is, you have the ability, I think, to connect with another former player. And I think Chris Johnson would probably entertain the question a lot more from Michael Strahan than he would Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, Connor Newt, right? Because
that's fair.
He knows that Michael Strahan has gone through the same risks. So I think there was a way for Strahan to ask that question without it being, do you regret it? You know, there's a tact.
Like a gotcha moment. Like,
yeah, no. Right. You don't have to do it like that. I think there is there's an empathetic way that Strahan could have done it that would not have had Chris Johnson bristling and saying, why are you asking me that question?
I'm sure Strahan thought about that question, and he thought about it a lot, because essentially, even in all that, that's the first thing people want to know. You know, would he do it over again? And listen, had the question been asked, nobody would have thought of it. Nobody would have thought of it.
Everybody said, hey, great question.
Just like a good question. Anybody would have asked the question. But because it wasn't asked, now there are some that say, well, why didn't he ask it? And he should have asked it. Listen, he understands that me asking Chris that question, I already know what the answer is.
Yeah, I think we know what, like, CJ would have
exactly,
said.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, that's what Strahan is thinking. I know what he's going to say. And there are a lot of people out there that knows what he's going to say, too. They just want to hear him say it. So I am not going to, you know, bog him down with that question where he has to sit and give an explanation on, you know, why he wished he wouldn't have or would have continued to play. Ask him about his, you know, how did he find out about the diagnosis? What has his life been after that diagnosis? If he wants to, because I think there are times in you know, within an interview that I may have a question, but you may answer it and I don't have to ask it, you know? And if Chris wanted that to be a part of his story, he would have said it. But he doesn't want that to be a part of his story. You know why he doesn't want it to be a part of his story? Because more times than not, players, hockey, baseball, football, it doesn't matter. But I'm just talking about the two sports that are the most violent, hockey and football. We're going to choose, more than likely, a lot of guys are going to choose, I would play anyway.
Mm-hmm. And the other part of it, I think, is as much as the studies show that there is a tie-in, there's a possible tie-in to ALS and a long football career, you can't know with certainty that that's the reason that Chris Johnson has it. So this would be a hard thing, I think, for anybody who's in that moment. But I don't know if it's productive to look back for him or his family to say, you know, I wish I could go back and not have played. It's nothing productive exactly. That comes out of that at this point, other than maybe, hey, what about your kids? What about other people that know you? Mm-hmm. They can make their own decision. But he made his decision. He had a great career, and he is where he is. It's a terrible, terrible situation he's in. But still, I think the question, it's a great, thoughtful question to ask.
Well, that was the clean part of Perlman's comments that we could play on the show. Mm-hmm. He continued, here is a transcript via Awful Announcing. Quote, this is from Jeff Perlman. Chris Johnson is dying, and he showed up on Good Morning America to tell a story. And Michael Strahan, one of the great cowards on TV, in my opinion, sits there and pretends, oh, this is heartbreaking. It's so sad. I can't believe this is happening to you. And doesn't have the courage and the decency and the wherewithal to mention the ties between football and ALS. And that's because he's getting paid a bleep load of money not to. It's bleeping disgusting. End quote. See, that takes it too far for me personally.
He made it personal. That's what he did. That is all a personal thing. Maybe it's personal to Michael Strahan. You can tell by the tone and the tenor of the text and him calling him what he called him. That's personal. You just took it from being about Chris to now it being about you and Strahan.
Well.
Good point.
Perlman
is like that.
But either way, I'm not going to, excuse it because he's like that.
No, I'm not defending Perlman. What I'm going to say is that mm-hmm. Perlman has taken it upon himself to be like the media ombudsman of the entire
right.
internet.
Right.
Where he.
And he does this in a lot of different scenarios, not just, stuff like this.
Right.
Yeah. It's wide ranging.
Yes. So this is part of his shtick. But please continue.
Yeah, but he made it. I can understand him saying, hey, listen, that was a prime opportunity to ask a question. And you didn't ask it for whatever reason. But you then went and attacked the interviewer. You attacked him and made it about you and him now instead of about Chris. We all know what's happening with Chris Johnson. I'm not going to say he's dying. He's continuing to live. Let's get that straight first, Perlman. He's continuing to live. There are people that have lived with ALS for a very long time. Shaw is one of them. OJ Brigance is another that I know personally. So I look at it as him continuing to live, but it's in a different manner. You made that about you and Strahan. That's what you did. That's why I don't like that part. He was right in a sense of hey, listen, maybe it's something people want to know, and you could have asked it. But the minute you went out of your way to call Strahan a name, you made it personal.
Someone on our YouTube chat on the ALS study numbers says those numbers are so negligible. So in 59 years, the study identified 38 players. Again, here from the study, 19,423 professional football players who played at least one or more NFL games during their careers were included in the study. The scientists went back to 1960. 38 players received a diagnosis of ALS between 1960 and 2019, and 10 of them were still living when the scientists finished their analysis by 2021. So 38 doesn't seem like a big number. I understand that. But you can't ignore the link between the two.
No, you can't ignore it. And I think the reason you can't ignore it and why it should be in the forefront of everybody's, at least that participates with the sport, that is involved in any way, they should stay in the forefront of your mind, is because, say, Chris Johnson, he has no history of ALS in his family, none whatsoever. So you can't say it's a genetic thing. So they're trying to figure out now, well, if it's not a genetic thing, what is it? That's the part they're trying to, figure out. Well, what about the guys that, doesn't have it in their family or may have not had played as long or wasn't at a, you know, quote unquote physical position. Why is it that they have, maybe it's a combination of playing in high school, playing in Little League, and all those years together mounted up. That may be something they can sort of try to figure out. But that's why I tell parents, listen, if you're asking me, don't let your kid play tackle football until he's basically in high school. Don't. All the rest of that stuff is a money grab. I'm talking about fundamentals. That's all. Because when you get in Little League, I'm going to tell you what you see. You see one guy that can run faster than everybody else and outrunning everybody else. You see one guy that's bigger than everybody else. Why do you think they put a weight limit?
Weight limit.
Because people had kids that were 100 pounds bigger than the kids that were trying to tackle them. So what you see is a bunch of guys running around. You're trying to convince them to do one thing. They ain't doing it. They may get it at times, but to them it's just fun. If you want to teach the fundamentals of football, do not put your kid in tackle football until they're basically in high school. That's why flag football has become so popular, because it teaches them fundamentals.
615-737-1025 will continue to take your reaction to this. Plus, we will look ahead to the World Cup, and we do have to say goodbye to someone who brought us a lot of joy over the past few weeks. Or if you're like me, you think he's a plant and wasn't real to begin with. We'll discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingen, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Bingen and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingen here with you. Here's something interesting. Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce will have their wedding at Madison Square Garden on Friday night.
Ah.
According to a law enforcement official briefed on the security plans.
Friday night.
Was that guy supposed to spill the beans there?
I don't know.
Oh, man.
Friday night.
Could have gotten himself in trouble with the NYPD.
Friday night. What are you doing on Friday night? Mm-hmm. You want to go to a wedding? I don't think you can get in.
I don't think they're selling tickets, are they?
No.
No.
Something just seems kind of odd about Taylor Swift getting married at Madison Square Garden, but I get the security protocols, everything like that. But it doesn't seem very romantic, you know?
Not really. Well, I'm sure they
the ambiance.
They make it look good.
I'm sure. You know, they both have a couple of extra, you know,
coins
to throw around. But that's not what we were supposed to talk about. It just popped into my head when I saw it on the timeline. All right. World Cup action tonight. The U.S. men's national team in action against Bosnia-Herzegovina. A 7 p.m. start. That game at Levi Stadium in Santa Clara, California. Or, in the FIFA wording, San Francisco Bay Area Stadium.
Because, we name the stadiums what we want to name them.
Right. I guess FIFA can't use the names.
The corporate sponsor, yeah, I guess. Whatever.
Anyway, we'll see what happens, of course. If the U.S. men's national team wins, they would face the winner of Senegal and Belgium. Senegal leading 2-0 late in the second half. Now, you tell me, because I'm not a soccer expert, would that be an upset, Senegal defeating Belgium?
I think a slight upset. I don't know if it's a big upset, but Belgium, I think, is a team that's been sort of circled, if I followed closely enough, a lot of upside, but they've sort of underperformed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the African teams have collectively done pretty well. I think better than some expected. Like Morocco has won. Ivory Coast put a big scare into England earlier today. And Senegal's got the lead here. So maybe not a huge upset, but worth noting, and I'm sure a lot of USA fans are watching closely, but first things first, Coach Willie says, focus tonight on Bosnia-Herzegovina.
They are a 1.5 goals favorite.
1.5 goal favorite?
Yeah.
Yeah.
USA.
They played really well. Now, beware of the sports books. This is something that I've been reading about. It just happened to pop up on the feed that I was reading, I think, on ESPN. But so many people are betting so much money, mm-hmm, that a lot of the sports books are kind of like leveraged. And so many people who probably aren't even soccer fans are just like betting on the USA. Like, I think that affects the line, right? Just the excitement that US is playing so well. Like, I want to bet on the USA. But that probably affects the betting odds, right?
It could.
I am not a gambling man.
I'm not either. But I think when you go to a horse track, the odds change based on who's betting on who, and the goofballs. Like I had a very famous person, not famous, but a high end person that I had.
They're famous to you, Willie.
I don't know if that's the right word, but this guy was the owner of this racetrack, and okay. I was just the dumb guy saying, "Hey, number three, I'll put $2 on number three, just at the racetrack." Uh-huh. He's like, "There's like 1% of our clientele here that are making money off of doughheads like you, because you guys don't know what you're doing." I was like, "Yep, that's me. I don't know what I'm doing." Yeah,
pretty much,
but it affects the odds. If I bet on number three, that goes into the mix. I think that happens on a bigger scale.
Willie Donick, doughead.
Doughead sports better.
Doughead Donick. There's your new nickname. Doughead Donick.
But seems more offensive than anything else I've ever heard someone called.
Yeah, that's
saying something.
Doughead. That's I like that one. One country no longer in the World Cup, Germany. And as we discussed yesterday, this Freddy guy.
Speaking of doughheads.
He's probably making a lot of dough. This viral sensation. Listen to this story. Again, courtesy of Awful Announcing. Freddy, or at FreddyLA7, as his handle would read, became the viral sensation of this World Cup. A wide-eyed German youngster. Freddie gained a seemingly organic, in parentheses, following in the lead-up to the World Cup by posting his travels throughout the United States, discovering the innocent joys of late-night Taco Bell, diverse landscapes, and Ella Langley as he and his German buddies traversed the country. But now, fewer than 24 hours after Germany's defeat, Freddie's account is nowhere to be found. It appears as if Germany's early exit from the World Cup officially broke Freddie.
So I guess he didn't stay.
Freddie deleted his Twitter.
I wonder how many followers he had.
A lot.
Man.
This screenshot has 752,800 followers for Freddie on X. Awful Announcing continues. The Freddie saga has inspired some wild conspiracy theories. Some found his positive outlook too pure to be true, questioning if he was some sort of plant designed to engage in guerrilla marketing tactics for the brands, people, or even states that he was posting about. I believe in that one. Others thought the anonymous Freddy was some sort of social experiment designed to play out in front of hordes of social media followers.
Well, I guess.
But now, Freddy is gone.
He was just invited to the White House, too.
He was invited to the White House.
But they don't know who Freddy is. Well, I guess the White House does.
Well,
I guess.
I would have believed
either or they would have accomplished their mission. Either he was a plan or he tried to. Either way, it accomplished the mission.
I mean, look, it's like that episode of The Simpsons with Itchy and Scratchy and Poochie. Freddy did all of the things he was supposed to do and at the end said, "I have to go now. My planet needs me." And he just disappeared. That's what happened with Freddy. Apparently, someone dug up a tweet from him from a long time ago where he claimed to have been to the U.S. before. It's like, see, he's lying. This is not some wide-eyed German tourist who's never been to the U.S. before. He's been here before.
But then they went on and explained, you know, had he been here? Well, I guess he had. But maybe he hadn't been to those certain places.
Well, you know what? Our resident soccer correspondent, Nick Frazier, has sent me a statement from Freddie.
If Nick is Freddie?
What if Nick could be Freddie?
I hadn't thought about that one.
See, Nick wants you to think he's all Italian
exactly.
and stuff, but he's actually German this whole time.
Man.
Freddie said, "Hey, everyone, just wanted to let you know why I deactivated my account. This was the plan all along, even before we started the World Cup trip." Sure, Freddie. "Too many people seem to have a problem with us having a genuinely good time here in the country, and this is ruining the fun a bit for us because we really just wanted to document our road trip and never expected that people would have a problem with it. People are digging into my 22,000 posts to find a handful of, in their opinion, controversial posts and post them without zero context to make me look like a bad person."
That sounds just like Nick. I can hear Nick saying that. I can hear Nick. I hear his voice.
So he's
posting this as if he's a real person. But the net result is that quotes Freddie, the account. Mm-hmm. He's no longer. So this could be a theme song. He could have played in the background. He could have said the account is over, and so Curtis Mayfield could have jumped in with this here. This is one of my favorite songs.
Yeah. Oh,
Freddie's dead. The account, Freddie. Maybe the not account. The real person, but the account is it's no more.
It's over.
But look, I just
love the groove of that song. Bonum bump. Bonum. I think the People's Court stole that from Curtis Mayfield.
Yeah.
Instead of bonum bump, it's boo bump.
Oh, they just slowed it down.
Ba-dum-bump.
Are we doing the vanilla ice under pressure thing here?
Oh no.
Are you aware of this one?
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Because Vanilla Ice and Ice Ice
sued.
Baby
yeah.
uh-huh. samples Under Pressure by, uh-huh. is it Queen and David Bowie?
Yes, yes.
And his response was, like, there's one.
Slight difference, yes. Yeah, right. That didn't fly.
It's way different.
Like, he was like, their song is like, da na 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 na. And mine is like, na 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 na.
Right, it's
na 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 na.
Oh, there's a bigger
one. One note. One note's different. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well,
okay.
I mean, he still gets to perform the song, right?
Yeah.
So, that's okay.
But he has like a home improvement show now, too.
And did Freddie send Nick that or Freddie posted that?
Freddie posted that. Do you think Nick knows Freddie?
I think Freddie is Nick.
You
and
think
Nick is Freddie.
Freddie is Nick.
Yeah, oh. Nick is Freddie.
It's like J. Jonah Jameson trying to figure out who Spider-Man is.
Yes, uh-huh. this is yep. Well, RIP to Freddie's account. One texter says, I almost forgot. Happy Bobby Bonilla Day to Willie. We've mentioned it.
We've
once
covered
or twice.
It, but okay. I thank you.
How do Mets fans like celebrate? Do you have like a cupcake or a something?
No. I mean, they're losing 9-2 right now in the eighth
it's
inning.
It's going great. It's going great for the Mets.
Yeah.
Oh, since I looked, Belgium tied the game. Look at that.
Two quick goals.
Wow.
That was hit the post right there. Senegal was trying to go back ahead.
At the beginning of the segment, it was 2-0 Senegal. Now it's 2-2.
Unbelievable. Wow. We got drama.
I just had my head down, and I look. Oh, my goodness. Willie, you should do a study on how many times did the Mets lose on Bobby Bonilla Day?
That's a good question.
That's it. What's their record on Bobby Bonilla Day since they made that deal? That's a great question.
I mean, it could be worse. One texter points out the Cubs defeated the Padres today, 23-3.
That's what you're talking about, Willie.
And the former Commodore, Dansby Swanson, 3 home runs and 8 RBIs. He's got 16. Dansby Swanson has had a huge week or so, a couple at the Mets' expense. Cubs are playing good ball. Much more fun to be a Cubs fan than a Mets fan right now.
I'm sure it is.
615-737-1025. I don't know how real this is, but I found it on Reddit, so be careful. From a year ago, the Mets have won 6 of their last 7 Bobby Bonilla Day games, including their last 3. So it would be 6 out of 8, I guess?
It's going to be 6 out of 8, barring a huge comeback.
But, hey, they win.
They are 7-5 on July 1st since 2011.
Okay.
All right.
Soon to be 7-6.
They need to celebrate Bobby Bonilla Day then.
They need to bring him in.
Exactly.
They need to bring him in. Have they brought him in to throw out the first pitch on Bobby Bonilla Day at any point?
Not that I'm aware of.
They need to embrace
him. I can't swear that they have not, but I don't remember it happening. I feel like that would be a big story if they did.
Is he still in the area?
Bobby Bo?
Yeah.
Well, he grew up in New York.
He still lives there?
I don't know. It's a good question. He played for a lot of teams, mm-hmm. made a lot of money, still getting checks, as we know. So I don't know. He could probably have multiple residences, I would say.
615-737-1025. We will get back into NHL free agency. The Predators made one NHL signing today. They also made one notable trade this morning. We will break that down. Chris McFarland, Predators president and GM, is expected to address reporters momentarily, so we will keep you abreast of what he says. I know a lot of you out there like the word abreast for some reason.
I'm just going to drop this in right now. You have not given a word.
Okay.
Inconsistent?
This is a great. Today's word of the day is nabob.
Nabob. Whoa.
Nabob is a very rich or important person, such as Bobby Bonilla.
Nabob.
He is a nabob.
I thought you said napalm.
No, Nabob. N-A-B-O-B. He is a Nabob. It's Nabob.
Nabob.
Oh. Okay.
Bobby Nabob Bonilla.
How about Nabobby Bonilla?
Nabobby Bonilla.
Oh, okay, that's there got we a go. Good ring.
Bobby Bonilla Day.
615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.